You have been listening to Between the Covers, interviewing Elliot Weinberger. David Naiman is the host of that show. Coming up next is Black Talk, following this announcement.
On November 4th and November 18th, from 8 p.m. until 10, from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary, we will focus on Mr. Gil Scott-Heron. Gil Scott-Heron established the attitude and stylistic vocabulary of socially conscious music in America. His music was powerful, his lyrics relevant, and his voice beautiful. We will also submit a musical goodbye and a love letter to President Barack Obama. So join us from the grassroots, November 14th and November 18th, from 8 to 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland.
I got your love. You need to look no further.
Don't you know that?
Don't you know that? After my love, you'll never need another.
Don't you know that?
Don't you know that? I don't make no promises I can't keep. And I promised myself that I'd love you forever. How many times must I say that for you to understand? Don't you know that I love you so? Baby, don't you know?
Good morning and welcome to the November edition of Black Book Talk. I'm Patricia Welch, the library lady.
And I'm Ovi Hill with Reflections Mirror Image Books.
And I'm Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman.
And we are very fortunate today to have as our guest Portland author Denorja Taylor, who has a new book out called Seedlings. Welcome to Black Book Talk, Denorja.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I'd like to ask you to just read, just sort of introduce, before we say anything else, introduce our listeners to a small portion of the book by reading something for us.
Okay. In the year 2047, the people on Earth will not have real food to eat that is grown from the soil. They will eat chemicals that are dressed to have the appearance of food they remember. Now the people are starved for nourishment and their bodies are gaunt, withered, or bloated.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit more about Seedlings.
Well, Seedlings is a book. The way I came up with it is that I was reading so much about what's going on in our food supply, and what really caught my attention was about 2 years ago, a tree was sprayed with insecticides, and over 50,000 bees were killed.
Gosh.
And then I started reading more about bees, and I read someplace that 25 to 30% of the bees are dying every year. And people have to recognize that when the bees are gone, so is our food supply, because they pollinate most of our food between the bees, the butterflies, wind, and other insects that pollinate our food supply. And we have to be cognizant of that. And so that was the one thing. And then the other thing is that I was reading about the pesticides a company was putting in the corn that would kill the insects when they tried to chew on the corn. And I was thinking, well, if it's injected into the corn as it grows and it's for human consumption, we get those same pesticides.
Absolutely.
A lot of things, I started uncovering and looking at that. I said, okay, something's got to be better than this. And I was wondering, where is the outrage? Where is it that people are really complaining? We did have a bill that did not pass about a year ago where to identify foods that were genetically altered,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't pass. I want to know what's in the food that I buy, I pay for.
Right. I think a lot of us do. I mean, I think that's like an ongoing conversation, and I feel like that the outrage is there, but maybe not the knowledge.
And so I just started keeping notes on the stuff that I uncovered, and I said, okay, I need to bring my time travelers back and make a story about how people could be involved in growing their own food or making sure they buy food right from local farmers, and ways that they can protect the bees by not putting any pesticides in their own on their gardens. And then there are ways that we can, you know, bring bees into our garden.
Well, the Beatles sang a song, Let It Be. Now, I'm trying to figure out, this is a science fiction book, and mm-hmm. it's your third book,
mm-hmm.
and these time travelers, what role do they play in it?
My main character, Kay, she visits my two main characters, protagonists, in the book, and she visits their dreams to tell them what needs to happen in order for them to help save the planet. The planet, in this story, as I read in 2047, the planet will die. If we don't get our food supply together, there won't be any people. So we've got to save the bees. We've got to protect the seeds that go into the soil. We got to clean up the soil. We got to clean up the water. We got to clean up the air. And so they're given all this information. And Seth, who is the male character in the story, has an encounter with someone he doesn't quite remember from his childhood, who has started an underground global organization to save the planet. Neither of them trust him at first. Both of them live on the Oregon coast. Both Melody is his love interest, and Seth, they both live on the Oregon coast, and there she has been taking up, after her mother passed away, she is getting seeds from all the local farmers and preserving them. And so that people will have real foods that are not chemically altered. One of the things that I found interesting in my research is that worldwide, there are several places that have all the seeds to grow everything in case of a global disaster.
Wait a minute, you mean there's one place or there are many places?
There are several places around the world.
Okay.
They're in the cold part, Norway, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They have some places in Europe. They have some places. We have a place in the United States, and right now that place, it escapes my memory. I think it's in Colorado, where the seeds are sealed And so if we have a disaster, major disaster, where our food is gone, that somebody, that the people who survive can still have seeds to grow food when the soil can't take it.
I hear our third member, who I think is kind of battling a little cough, but Emma, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, Emma. This is Denorja talking to you.
Hi, Denorja. So glad you're with us today.
Thank you so much.
I love so many things about your new book, but I want to go back to when you began the book, when you began writing it. You told a story about a beehive that was at your house in Arizona. I think it was in Scottsdale.
Yeah, in Tucson.
In Tucson.
Yeah.
And how you called the beekeepers out to take the hive away, and they split the honey with you?
Well, what happened was I called Beekeepers of America down in Tucson, and they would come out and dip the honey or take the honey from the hive, and they would give me half, and they would take the other half, and that was fine. And I had in my backyard, I had grapefruit trees, and the bees really did pollinate those trees.
Well, I was giving that some thought one day because I realized that every year at our school, there would be a swarm of bees, mm-hmm. and they would put the yellow tape around wherever they were for the kids to stay away from that area,
mm-hmm.
and then someone would come out and take the swarm away. I started thinking about migration on the part of bees, and do bees live year after year, and how they pass the information about the migration, and what happens if somehow they lose the mapping. You know, how does that all work, that they don't come that way anymore, pollinate the things in that area, and take things from the trees in that area? Do we lose that element from honey or from being distributed, that pollen from going from place to place? Do you know anything about that?
Well, bees will go to the places that that are conducive to their activity. They need to be around substances that they can do their wax, their honey, their royal jelly, and a place that their queen can live. And so if those elements are good for them and safe for them, they have enough to pollinate, they have all the stuff that they need in a certain area, they will be there. And they know how to go from one place to another, and they will go together most of the time.
Okay. Tell us a little bit more about the main characters in this book, about Seth and Melody, because your time travelers actually have traveled through all three of your books, but I have to admit, I'm like in love with Seth. This is a good man. This man knows how to treat this woman. And I will say that I like the fact that they are not just aware and in their little world, that these are African Americans, these are Black people who are not just involved in this movement, but take a leadership role. And I think the notion that African Americans are in fact very, very concerned about these things, because not just Africans, Black people, people of color around the world, we're affected by this. But I don't think there's enough dialogue and enough information that shows that, yes, this is an important part of our life. So I just appreciated you putting this on the table, and I love the way you presented these two people. So tell us about our two protagonists.
Okay, Seth, had, you know, a lonely life growing up, and he is divorced. He went away to school in Europe and came back because his father was a beekeeper and he didn't want to have anything to do with it. And he took care of his father until he passed away, and in that time he learned the bee business. And he became fascinated that why didn't he recognize that before? And Melody, Melody always listened to her mother. about the seeds and how important the seeds. Now, in their childhood, all along, the time travelers had been coming and telling them things. And it made them stronger. And then when they appeared to them, as they were adults, at first they thought they were real people. But then they realized they had been taken on journeys.
Excuse me, let me ask you something. Okay, so the time travelers came not just to Melody and Seth, but their families, right? Because it seems to me that there's one scene where the time traveler comes to Melody, and Melody's mother says no, or not now.
Yes.
Or something. So this is they've been coming to these families for a while. Okay,
yes.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that was one of the characters that is in the book several times, but she always brings surprises. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather not talk
about. And that's
about,
all we. Yeah, okay. I just wanted to clarify that. Let's get back to the lovebirds.
Nadja. Yes,
Nadja.
Yes.
My question is: so do the time travelers always come back to the same spot, and that's why they're communicating with this family? Or are they just communicating just with that family, no matter what spot they're in?
They are communicating with that family because one of the time travelers, Kay, has a specific motivation. And so she has to be a part of helping them save the Earth from destruction. One of the things in the book that I do mention in the opening, in fact, is a quote from the Bible. And it says, "Thou dost cause the grass to grow for the cattle, and plants for man to cultivate, that they may bring forth food from the earth." And it goes on to say that the earth can replenish itself. And it can, if left alone to do that. But we have so much in the soil and in the air that it's very hard to recover if you're constantly beating up the planet. And so these time travelers try to engage the humans in taking care of as much as they can take care of in terms of the food supply for everybody.
Okay, you're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO. I'd like to know one thing about this book. You got 31 chapters, 222 pages, and you self-published this book. So how would someone go about getting a copy of it?
Well, it's available on Amazon, and I will be doing a book signing at, in other words, on November 12th. That's a Saturday from 7 to 9. And that bookstore, and I'm sorry, I don't have the exact address. It's on Killingsworth, near Vancouver and Williams. It's in that area. And I'll be there with books for sale. It's also on Kindle. I just put it up on Kindle. And so for people who don't want to carry around a book, they can order it on Kindle and download it.
And of course, we will be ordering it from Multnomah County Library.
Oh, thank you so much.
Do you have study groups with these characters? How would people come together and talk about this book?
Well, if people want to do, you know, like if book clubs want to get it and want me to come and talk about it, I'd be very happy to do that. I am in a part of a critique group. And so I, you know, we talk about it, and that helps me get it through, get it done.
Okay.
But I don't have any regular regularly scheduled talks about it. You know, I just contact bookstores and see if they're available, sometimes restaurants to see if they're available, and if I can have a space in there to talk about the books.
Emma, are you still with us?
I am. I am just listening very closely.
You know, I have to say to our listeners, I don't know, maybe this is Halloween overload, but we have had some of the strangest sound effects in this program. Construction sounds, telephone sounds, whatever. It is not your, it's not your radio, it's not your imagination. It's just an interesting day in live radio, live broadcasting. Sorry, go back, Emma, forgive me. Do you want to stop?
So, DeNorja?
Yes.
Have you started a new book, a follow-up to this book?
Well, I have started a new one. It's not actually a follow-up, but each one of my books has many of the same characters. And they all have struggles. They have stuff to overcome. And they each have their own battles, but they recognize that they want a way to contribute to society as a whole and to the planet. And each of them find their own way to be able to do that. And that's what I like about it is, even though they have struggles, they also have purpose. And they discover their purpose in working with the time travelers. And the time travelers also have to have a purpose. You know, why is Kay surrounding these two people and pushing them forward? And she wants to help save the planet.
Have you found your purpose through writing these books?
I have, and that's telling stories. Telling stories about how people have the strength within them to survive anything. And we can. We just have to keep plugging away. And that's what my characters do. They keep searching and keep looking for what is it that they're supposed to do, what is their purpose, and what is their passion.
How did you get into the area of science fiction writing? Are there that many African Americans or blacks into that particular genre?
There is a science fiction, black science fiction writers organization that's national.
What's it called?
It's Black Science Fiction Writers.
Oh, okay, that's pretty
Society.
Direct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can find it online.
Okay.
And there are, you know, there are wonderful people who write science fiction. I started thinking about time travel when I was a little girl. My mother liked Joseph Cotton, and there was this picture, Portrait of Jenny, and it was done back in the 40s. And Joseph Cotton met her on a skating rink. And every time he saw her, she was older and older and older. And I wondered, I was watching it with my mother, and I was wondering, what? How did she grow so fast? And how did she become an adult so quickly? And come to find out, at the end, when you realize she had died in 1910, you know, that she was time traveling. And so then I started, as I was older in my teens, I started watching anything that had to do with science fiction. And I loved Octavia Butler.
Yes.
And there's, you know, Stephen Barnes. I met him several times when he's been here with Willamette Writers. He wrote the part of the screenplay for television for Star Trek. And people didn't know that. This is an African-American man. And his wife, Tanana Reeve Dew, she has many books, several books out, and they're also science fiction or speculative fiction.
Yes.
And they're a bit off the beat of what we think is supposed to be normal.
But they're great. We've interviewed Tanana Reid Dula, I think, more than once.
Oh, she's wonderful.
I
love her books. Yes. The Between is one that just knocked me to my, knocked me out totally.
The first three sentences. Yes. It's like you are either there or you are not. But mention some more. There's a woman, N.K. Jemisin, who was more like fantasy. Mm-hmm. She just won the, I don't know if it's the Hugo or the Nebula, whatever is a sci-fi award.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so good.
And so one of the things, I'm going to read this. During Melody and Seth's quest, they come to a place where the ordinary is strange and the strange is ordinary. And all life that is, was, and will be is in the now. And that's what we have to think about, because Melody and Seth came to that point that everything in my past, everything that happens in the future, everything is right now. Because everything I do, everything I want, all of that is all inside me right this minute. And so that was kind of what I was trying to say in this book, that we have to be aware and cognizant of what's our purpose, why are we doing this, and what is the positive effect it will have on the society that we live in.
We're getting near the end. Let's see, Emma, because you're sort of time traveling from home to get to us. Is there anything that you wanted to say before closing?
I do have one more question. Denarja, have you ever even considered writing outside the genre of science fiction? And if so, what?
Well, for probably the last 30 years, I have been writing grant proposals. And since I retired, I don't want to do that piece anymore. I want to write stuff that's fun. I want to create my own worlds. And because one of the books, the people live in pods because the air is so bad. And well, anyway, I'm rewriting that right now. And I like creating my own worlds that people can live in. And I try to make it so people live in harmony. We have so much of looking at, especially people of color on television, in the movies, in commercials even, where people of color are either the victims, the villains, or they're idiots.
Yeah, right.
And I want to see people in my characters, in my books, that have a brain and use it for the betterment of the community at large.
Wow, this is very, very interesting. Could you tell us where are you going to go from here now? We only got a couple of minutes, so how do we keep you going?
Well, I'm constantly looking at what's going on around me and what can I affect in a positive way, or let people know about it in a positive way. And I try to approach it so that it's palatable and not scary. These people, they save their seeds. They work with the bees. They work with the community. They encourage everybody to come together. And that works.
It does. And this interview has worked. Denarja Taylor, we are so pleased that you've come to tell us today about Seedlings. And we hope that when you finish your next work, that you'll come back and see us again. But thank you for joining us at Black Book Talk today. This is Patricia Welch, the Library Lady, saying see you next month.
And O.B. Hill, bye-bye.
Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman, see you next month.
I got your love. You need to look no further.
Don't you know that?
Don't you know that? After my love.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Next up is Shocks of Sheba, but first, these announcements.
So that I love you forever. How many times must I say that?
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Anthony V and the Born Fire Band with Cool John Cool, Speaker Minds, MC Mike Crenshaw, and more on Friday, November 4th at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland. Anthony B. grew up in Northwest Jamaica. He tours extensively all over the world and is known for fiery, high-energy performances. Again, that's Anthony B. and the Born Fire Band with Cool Johnny Cool, Speaker Minds, and MC Mike Crenshaw on Friday, November 4th at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under the community events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Dookie Jam, Thursday, November 3rd at 10 p.m. at Dante's in Portland. The Dookie Jam is a funk jam session that happens monthly at Dante's. Lots of funky treats for your eyes and ears, including live streaming video on Audio Globe and live streaming audio on the KBOO website. Again, that's Dookie Jam, Thursday, November 3rd at 10 p.m. at Dante's, 350 West Burnside in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right.